That meeting being concluded, we'll proceed with the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors meeting, June 14th, 2022 at 5 p.m. The board is meeting by video virtual conference call. We're calling this business meeting to order at 5:03 p.m. And we'll do the roll call. Tom Donahue.
Here.
Sean Carlton.
Here.
Cameron Gogas.
Here.
And I'm Ann Price, Vice Chair, standing in for Carolyn McVicker, our chair, who's not able to be with us tonight. Item three on the agenda is the minutes. First up, the May 3rd, 2022 business meeting minutes. Did anyone have any corrections?
Is now
on those minutes.
I've got questions, but on the business meeting?
On the business meeting minutes, yeah.
Oh, hang on, let me get to that page. Oh, crap, where are you? Need a bigger desk. Well, I got questions on the financial. I can't find the other page. I had questions. Go ahead.
Okay. So, hearing no other questions on the May 3rd, 2022 business meeting, do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
I move we accept the May 3rd, 2022 business meeting minutes as presented.
Thank you. Sean is seconding, so we have a motion and a second to approve the May 3rd, 2022 business meeting minutes as presented. All those in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 The minutes were approved unanimously. The next set of minutes was the May 24th, 2022 Budget Committee meeting minutes. Did we have any questions or comments on those meeting minutes?
Yep,
I've got
on the business. Yep, I've got on the business side. And that is that. Okay.
This is on the budget committee, right?
On the budget committee. No, I'm on the financials. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay.
I did have a question, though, Ann.
Yes, Tom?
I know we're at the budget committee meeting minutes, but I had a question about the budget meeting itself. I noticed that our budget was not published on the website. Did we publish that in the Sun before we had that meeting, or was it on the website? I didn't see it.
That's not a typical practice, to publish our proposed budget on the website or in the newspaper.
I believe it's published when it is finally adopted. Is that not correct?
We published the LB1 in last week's paper, which is typically what you would do, what everybody else does, and it has the notice of the budget hearing attached to that.
What is an LB1?
It tells you how much money was being proposed in every category, and how much money is being asked for in property taxes.
Okay, that was published in the newspaper, but not in the website. Is that correct?
Correct. We're required to publish it in the newspaper.
Who makes that requirement? The state ORS?
Yeah, it would be the state, yes.
Because I know I could get after you.
Tom, I hate to interrupt you, but we're on an agenda item to review the budget committee minutes. Could we complete that review and and discussion of the minutes themselves, and then have further questions at a later time.
All right, fine. I have no other questions about the budget committee meeting minutes.
So well, can I hear
then I do, because then it would be on the budget committee meeting minutes about Winter being in the meeting, because that would be posted on the meeting minutes.
Is now exiting.
I apologize for that. I will make that correction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on the budget committee meeting minutes? I've let the record show we have been joined now by Kevin Schluka, who has an item number later on in the agenda. So welcome, Kevin. So do I hear a motion to approve the May 24th, 2022 Budget Committee meeting minutes as amended?
I make that motion as amended.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Sean is seconding, so we have a motion and a second to approve the May 24th, 2022 Budget Committee meeting minutes as amended. All in favor? Say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So that's great. Approved. That motion was approved unanimously. Item four is the financial report. Do we have any questions on the accounts payable?
I do.
Was that you, Cameron?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Page one, Atlas Copper Compressors LC, Oils and Filters, $1,876.34. Yes. Mm-hmm. I hate for
sale.
Are those for extras to have
a... No. No, we did oil changes and changed out the filters on our compressors. And doing it ourselves saves us a ton of money.
Okay. So how is this like an annual, I mean, on hours on the machines?
That one I'm not positive on.
Yeah.
I believe it is annual.
Yeah, it's time-based. It's on an annual basis, not based off of usage. It's time-based.
Now, would it behoove us to be in a little extra stock on some of this stuff? Because I foresee... You know, things are going to go up. And if we've got the monies to have a little bit of stock of supplies, is that a possibility mm-hmm. with some of this stuff?
Well, we're trying to do that to a lot of our parts and supplies that we get, because we recognize that. I can't answer your specific question about these specific parts, but I know in general we are... we're ordering more than we typically need just to be sure if there's a supply shortage later, we'll be okay.
Okay. And then, Dan, who is Brightly? The annual service contract, is that somebody we're doing business with and it just changed to a different name?
Yes, it did. It was Dude Solutions. They are our work order software, and they got bought out by Brightly.
Okay. All righty. And then also down below, we've got an engineer install. Is that for the Horn Creek project that we've got going on for the new line that went in over there?
The engine, I'm not positive why it's called engineer install. I believe that's because the engineer was here and we paid for him to stay here.
That $869.79?
Yeah.
Okay. And then down a little further, there's WIN 911 for $3,030.
Yeah, that was, I believe, and depends on which one it is, I believe that we upgraded our WIN 911 is our alarm notification software. It is software that we have installed two separate programs, one at Horn Creek and one at the wastewater treatment plant. The one at Horn Creek was recently upgraded as part of a major project. I'm guessing this is the one for the wastewater treatment plant that upgrades that software to the latest and greatest version, and it was quite out of date.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of part of the stuff with the upgrade at Horn Creek. Page 2. We're probably down. There's Horn Creek. 330,928 Chase, and then there was another one for 21,845.47 Horn Creek bond payment.
That's our annual bond payment that we have to pay.
Now, how close to that being paid off? We're pretty darn close.
All right, it'll be paid off in 2027, I believe.
Oh, and I'm probably going to ask you about that all the time. I don't know.
It happens every year. You can keep asking.
I know. It's a big chunk of money, man. All right. And then I see we've got a $6,421.60 for hydrants.
Yeah.
That was more than one.
I'm sorry.
How many is that?
For hydrants? Yes, we bought two hydrants, one to have in stock, and another one is going in as down on South Broughton. We've got an opportunity with a development down there. They're going to install it, and our agreement was to provide it. We need a hydrant down in that area. It's an area where we don't have good fire hydrant coverage. So one of them will be installed within the next couple of months. The other one is just for our stock.
Backup. Yeah. They're worth about $3,000 a piece.
That's,
wow.
Yeah.
Now that's with everything. It's everything. There's nothing that we have to add on to any of that stuff.
No, it's the hydrant. It's the footer valve. We just have to plumb it into off of one of our water mains.
Now, do we have like a backup stock for any of that supplies if any of that stuff go wrong, or do we just replace the whole hydrant? Like the guts of a hydrant?
No, typically you can replace parts of the hydrant to bring it back into good working condition. In this case, we felt like we needed to have a whole hydrant assembly in stock. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. But typically, if a hydrant just needs a repair, we won't replace the whole hydrant. We'll just do the repair.
So the two that we have in the stockyard there, are those any good, or are those bad hydrants that are laying on the ground in the back?
No, those are on a pallet. Those are the two new hydrants that you're referring to.
There's some old ones that were back there.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm guessing that those are hydrants that have been replaced in the past but still have parts we can scavenge if we need to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, moving down to Inland Environmental Resources, Meg Hydrock.
Are you still on the same page?
Yes, I am on page 2 of 6, 1,856. The reason I asked on that was that the Nether Hydrox, I had brought it up at our budget meeting, and I noticed that it went, we had another purchase at the end of the month of, that one was $2,193.75. My concern, are we going to, budget-wise, that went up damn near almost $400 for the Meg. And with things keep going up, are we going to be budgeting enough for our Meg site stuff for a budget for next year? Because that's like $400 in 15 days.
I believe the one that you're referring to from last month was for polymer, the $2,000 one.
Because it said made.
Oh, did it? Okay, well, that's very possible. Fingers crossed, we budgeted enough.
Okay. No, because it says made hydrox. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really concerned with chemicals and fuel. I don't think we're budgeted enough for that, but I've made that statement before. Okay, then now on page 3 of 6, We've got the Paul Corporation for $6,120. It's the remote program for Corn Creek. Is that all for the new line still?
No, that was, you guys might recall our sanitary survey that was done last October. It's the one that we were given outstanding performer in terms of the public water system for. You remember we were talking about that. One of the deficiencies that was noted during that sanitary survey by the state, and there weren't many noted, but one of them that was noted is that we aren't bringing a log removal value to our indoor SCADA system for the performance of the Horn Creek treatment plant, and we needed to do that. Just briefly, log inactivation is a requirement of all public water systems as a result of the Surface Water Treatment Act. Standard treatment or standard requirements requires 2 log removal of cryptosporidium, 3 log removal of giardia, and 4 log removal of viruses. This has to do with those log removals, and the state found a deficiency in that although they were being internally calculated, they weren't being displayed on the SCADA screen for the operators to see and to monitor and to respond to. And that was some internal PLC programming that we had to hire Paul to do to bring that into compliance with the state drinking program findings from our last survey.
Okay, okay. So we're all in compliance with all of that now.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And then you're going to probably talk about the dispatch services, TCB security services. That must have been for that water break that you had on up on, was it Slough?
We pay $40 a month just to have them be our dispatch service, and then we pay $1.10 per call out.
Oh, okay.
It could be any call out under the sun, somebody that saw something on the side of the road. We just charge $1.10.
Okay. And then, of course, the Tillamook County clerk for filing easements with the county. Which property was that on?
That was, I believe, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was for an easement agreement that we had to draft for a home on Kiwanda Drive. It's part of the Kiwanda Shores development. It was a new home that was supposed to have a sewer stub out, according to all our maps. It did not. Therefore, we had to arrange for a sewer service to that house, and it required that service line, in order for us to maintain it, required an easement that we had drafted up with the Kiwanda Shores Homeowners Maintenance Association. And that had to do with that easement that we had to create for that sewer service line.
Okay. And so we're all in compliance with the county on the easements and stuff. Okay.
Yeah. Once we get an easement, we have to file it with the county, and I believe that was the filing charge.
Filing fee. Okay. All right. Now we're on page 4-6. We've got the 20 shelf inventory, consolidated supply of $368.58. There was another one, $151, $651. What do we replenish of what inventory?
I would imagine it's water repair parts. We did several water leaks last month, but I'm not in the office at the moment, and I could get you those exact parts tomorrow if you like.
Oh, okay. It was for probably one of our, some water problem, leak. I noticed that there was a leak problem.
Yeah, I think it was for Hymax repair clamps is one. The problem is we order a lot of supplies from Consolidated, so it's difficult to address a single purchase. But typically we order piping, valves, fittings, water line repair clamps, things of that nature.
Well, I had brought this up once before. Is there any way for us to get as a preferred supplier contract with some of these guys and maybe get a break with some of the stuff that we get?
Well,
I believe we already do. Yeah.
With those guys or with everybody? I mean...
Well, usually in order to get a supplied or preferred supplier contract with somebody, you have to have many more people. It's the power of buying in numbers. And we did recently join the Oregon Buys system, which puts us into other water and wastewater municipalities in the state of Oregon. It gives us collective buying power, and we do have provide our preferred provider arrangements with some vendors, but unfortunately not all. There's a lot of vendors we use and a lot of vendors out there that haven't joined or signed up for that Buys Oregon program.
Kind of like what Kirk got going when we bought our stuff for our meter reading system through what was it, Lake Oswego or whatever. Okay. All right.
It is kind of similar.
Okay. All right. We go to next is our Cummins sales and service on our generators. Now, is that part of our program of going through our lift stations and repairing our lift station generators? And that system is
A couple years ago, the board made a motion to contract with Cummins to do an annual generator maintenance. They come through and make sure that everything is working correctly. And some of them are at lift stations. Some of them are at Horn Creek or the wastewater treatment plant.
So my question is, are any of these that, I mean, he obviously went through every one of them. Are any of these need to be replaced? Did he give like a wear and tear on some of this instead of, you know, putting money into something that's going to eventually die? We're in a long-term use of this stuff. I mean, did they give you a notice saying, hey, you want to be maybe this one? Did he give a list of ones that were boogered up? Or possibly of replacement?
No, all our generators, except for one portable one, which you guys may have heard me talk about before, it's a Vietnam-era Army surplus generator. All of them are in good shape, and our philosophy is to maintain what we got, and nobody has suggested replacing full replacements of any generation system as of yet.
So we're ahead of the system on that. We're preventive, you know, basically preventive maintenance. All right. I already talked about the MEG site going up. And then we spent Pacific City Hardware, well one and well two.
Just well one.
Just well one.
We replaced it's some sort of fancy valve. Help me out, John.
A check valve?
Check valve. There we go.
Okay. And again, is that something that we can clump up and have on inventory?
Yeah, in fact, I think we ordered, I'm not sure, but we may have ordered two of them. So far these check valves are easy to get, and... we'll take a look at that. I couldn't tell you what our current inventory of spare parts in regard to that is.
Okay. Now, do we have like an inventory list that you go through and have to go through and document that, you know, an annual type of thing of what we have on our shelves? Do you have anything in place? Oh, okay.
Every June we have to go through it because our auditors request to know how much we have on hand.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Next.
Any other questions on the payables? If not, do I hear a motion to approve the accounts payable for May 15th, May 31st of 2022?
I make a motion that we pay the payables.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for May 15th and May 31st of 2022. All in favor, raise your hand and say aye.
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 Okay, all approved unanimously. And now to the fiscal year report for 21-22. Did anybody have any questions or on that? Not hearing any questions on the fiscal year report for 21-22, we'll move on to the manager's report. John, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. Couple of highlights from the manager's report. Couple of things that I want to emphasize is we completed two major projects within the last month. One of them was the Horn Creek software and hardware upgrades. You all may remember that we recently been planned a long time. We have pulled fiber to Horn Creek, and which helped us with these software and hardware upgrades. We had a server that needed to be replaced just because it was well beyond its recommended replacement time. We had SCADA hardware, alarm Win911, alarm notification software that was upgraded to the newest versions. We also added a perpetual historian database, which we've never had before, but I believe that especially drinking water treatment plant should have that. It's basically a database that stores all our key performance indicators at any given moment over time. What it means is now that we have the perpetual historian database, if we ever needed to demonstrate 5 years from now, if we ever needed to demonstrate what our chlorine residual was leaving Horn Creek or the performance of the membrane filtration system, we can go back and retrieve that data historically almost within minutes. Otherwise, we would have, we're relegated to just paper forms of people that are getting readings and so forth, which are just, those snapshots in time. This perpetual historian system records all our online continuously monitoring instruments continually, so that we don't have to wonder what the chlorine residual was at 6 p.m. 3 years ago. We can go back and retrieve that data. And it's very important from a compliance and just from a good management, a good transparent legal perspective in terms of compliant operations of the treatment plant. So we added that as well. That was a big project. We had a programmer on site for nearly 2 full weeks, and the project went very well, very smoothly. So we can check that off our list. Horn Creek is completely up to date in terms of both hardware and software. The other project that we recently completed, I think I've made some of you aware of our obligations regarding the recreation and public purposes lease on the BLM property. One of our obligations was to delineate a 100-foot setback around our dune wellheads with a split rail cedar fence. That project, after being planned and budgeted for more than 5 years, is done. So we can check a box. We fulfilled one of our obligations related to that lease, and it looks pretty sharp. and we did a good job, and it, if anybody would like to see it, all one has to do is just take a walk back there in the BLM property near our wellheads, and you can see the work that was done there. So that project has been completed.
Great news on both of those projects, John. Thank you.
Yes, and just a couple of things. I mentioned our 2021 Consumer Confidence Report will be completed and made available to the public by June 15th. I'm going to have to put that off till the end of the week. So it's not going to be done tomorrow, but I will have it done by the end of the week, and our deadline for that is July 1st, so we're still well in advance for that. One other thing to mention is, you know, I've been teasing everybody with this water rights issue for a long time. I believe that we should give serious consideration to scheduling a special board meeting to discuss this topic in depth, you know, amongst the board members. This is, trust me, this is too big a discussion to try to cram into a business meeting. But I do believe that I'm very close to being ready. It's been a long ride. I've gone in a lot of directions on this. It's a very complicated issue. But I would propose, and you know, whether we nail something down now or a few weeks from now, I would propose a special board meeting to discuss our options related to our water rights and potential expansion of Horn Creek in depth, and we really should have a special meeting to thoroughly explore that topic.
Yeah, Tom, you had a comment or a question?
Yes, John. do you think that this is, should be a board meeting that's open to the public, or should this just be a workshop where we can hash out all the variables?
Workshops are public meetings. They're publicly noticed, and the public is welcome to attend.
Just
like a board meeting, but it's called a workshop because it's not a business meeting.
Does that mean that the public can't participate in a workshop, or does it mean they can ask questions or like a regular a board meeting?
I would have to research that. I believe that it's open for viewing. I don't know about the questioning part of it. I would have to look into that and clarify that. And John's suggesting that we do that sometime in the next 1 to 2 months. So we've got time to clarify that. And,
okay, I agree. We need to have a meeting. I know it's a complicated issue.
And also, rather than try to pick a date like tonight, I think it might be better for us to do a doodle poll and see who's available when we get to the point where John can see that in a certain period of time he'll have the information and the, I don't know if you intend to invite any other of your consultants or not, but when we have that kind of plan in mind. So
I would offer that that this particular meeting, if everybody can swing it, maybe should be conducted during business hours, because I would like one of our legal water rights consultants to attend, and I would like one of our technical water rights consultants to attend. And I think it would be far easier for them to do so if we scheduled a meeting for like 3 in the afternoon as opposed to after 5. I don't know with the public participation whether that's advisable or not. I'm sure I could convince them to attend no matter when we had it, but you know, these are very busy people. Their input is extremely valuable, not only in my efforts so far, but their input will be extremely valuable for any questions the board or even anybody from the public might have. Just throwing it out there as an option for consideration.
So if we kind of are generally in agreement that a special meet, a workshop would be appropriate for the subject, let's continue to think about some of those kind of details and any thoughts anybody has, if you could get those to John, that would be great. Cameron, did you have a question?
Yeah, I've got a comment. I think if we have, I mean, it, obviously this is a bit, pretty big subject, and if we do, I believe that we don't have to allow the public, but I think we should, because if we're going to be open and above board and information of going out there, because this is probably going to be a money issue, and we're going to probably might have to go after a bond or whatever. If so, and to be the, have the community informed, I'm in agreement in that it should be an open and that they have a time period for their questions and stuff. And like John says, 3 o'clock or whatever. So it should be open to the public.
So it sounds like we're going to stay tuned on the details, but we're all in agreement that a special workshop would be, a board workshop would be appropriate. So that's great.
That's it for the manager's report.
Well, I got some questions then, John, on your manager report. Our assist, this year we have, we figured what, we'd have 13 new hookups and stuff like that. What, we're up to 16 or more than that?
What's
the hookups?
Yeah, I don't know if the latest came is.
10.
10?
I believe.
And we still got more building, more stuff going on. So it'll start, we start, what, a new year now? Or next month?
We just had 3 additional SDCs that came in after the manager's report was created.
I imagine Kevin, he's going to hook there up. Better get in there soon. Also, I noticed on our regs, we're bumping back up on our regs and our system and stuff. Is there, any idea? Through our system, it's not harming, it's not getting through to our new system, but it's sure putting our band power to clean them up. John, you got any ideas how we can alleviate that problem? I think you said something about going to the bigger pumps and stuff like that, and it would probably chew them up.
Yeah, well, we've got, as you guys are aware, we're in the process of a couple of lift station upgrades that will involve pumps, new control systems, new control panels. We've got the pumps, we've got the control systems, we're just waiting for the panels. Apparently, like we run into a lot these days, there's a couple of parts that are slow to come. But we plan on replacing or upgrading 2 lift stations within the next couple of months. We plan on upgrading 4 additional lift stations by the end of the year. Once we do that, I fully intend and expect that we can quit talking about rags and we can quit looking at it as a performance indicator, because it should be a thing of the past.
It'd be nice. You know, the bad hours to go in there and do that. And then on the line 2 there, you, alarm mechanism for SBR1 is broke. You got that part in?
No, we haven't. I've got to call in to get a latest ETA for it. It was supposed to be, well, what happens these days, as you guys can imagine, is we get an estimated time of delivery on some of these parts, and then pretty soon there's another estimate and another estimate. We haven't got this part yet. We're still expecting it any day. But like everything else, things are slow to come. It's hard to get things. And, you know, specialized parts like this can be even more difficult because nobody builds these in advance and keeps them on the shelf anymore.
Okay.
And we're expecting it to arrive any time. I don't have an ironclad update for you, but it should be here. We're expecting it any day.
Okay. And then you said on the 25th we had the leak on Salal Lane. Is that problem? I look at that, and then of course I go back and I'm looking at our work, and I really do love these sheets and stuff that Kurt had started up. Are we kind of knocking down that problem with our big leak or our water, unaccounted, unbilled water use? Are we kind of finding out where that issue is? Or?
Well, it's still a work in progress. I will say that we've decided to cancel our original order. You may recall that we had ordered, actually, it's one of the more common leak detectors, acoustic water leak detectors on the market. But we eventually canceled that order and decided to go with a product that we feel is even more superior, more user-friendly, more intuitive, more reliable. That was, as you can see, supposed to be delivered tomorrow. And we were going to have it delivered by somebody who works for RJM, somebody who is a technical expert in using this equipment, and they were going to give us a full day of hands-on training. Unfortunately, I just heard from this person yesterday. There's been a delay, hopefully not a long one, in receiving this equipment. Once we get it, we're going to be proactively doing leak investigations. We'll be doing it on a proactive basis. We'll take a section of town, we'll cover it, we'll move to the next section. It'll be a process that takes some time. But I can tell you that this leak on Sal Owl was one we've been looking for a while. We've been noticing faster than normal drops in the 600K reservoir water elevation. We've been noticing the pumps having to come on more to replenish it. We knew we had a water leak in the area. We were having a hard time finding it. This was the water leak that was causing that. Because once we fix that water leak, our pump run times at the 300K that fills up to 600K fell within normal ranges. Our reservoir usage out of the 600K on a daily basis dropped back down to normal uses. We found the culprit for that, and it's got to be a contributing factor to our unaccounted for water as a whole.
I wonder if that, when I showed you that spot up on the street up above there on Fisher, I wonder if that was part of that draining off there.
It's entirely possible. Sometimes it's hard to tell what's groundwater or just storm runoff or what's a water leak. The only reason we were able to really identify this one is we're starting to get dry weather, and we're starting to notice pooled up water individually. Sometimes I wish, I'll immediately retract this as I say it. Sometimes I wish we added fluoride to the water, because if we did, we could always tell what's a water leak and what's not a water leak, because, you know, you can't use chlorine as an indicator because chlorine dissipates so quickly. Fluoride does not dissipate. If you've got fluoride in a puddle of water, that's a water leak. And unfortunately, that's not a tool in our arsenal, and I'm not advocating starting to add fluoride to the drinking water because of it, but that was an advantage in looking for these water leaks that I enjoyed for the city of Astoria that I don't have the benefit of here.
Sorry about that, buddy.
One other thing, John. What's the status of the project for the Dune and Spitwells remetering? We were talking about, queuing those up and putting one major meter on it, see if that helps our situation.
We still plan to move forward with that. We have budgeted for the new meters in our new fiscal year budget. We're just waiting until after July 1st to order those parts and to begin scheduling that project.
Thank you.
I've got another question on your manager report. We were talking about the power 100K and the 300K split wells. How much money are you looking for that to be a cost? I mean, is there money in the budget for all Or is that something we're going to be budgeting next year?
No, I believe we budgeted, well, I'm quite sure, and Rochelle can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm quite sure that we budgeted some dollars toward that project. It's going to take some engineering consultant work to help us with that. I've been waiting until I can begin that work to petition the state parks to allow us to install a standby generator down at the spit wells. That's state park property. We have to get their approval. They've indicated a willingness to work with us on that. They want me to submit a proposal with some drawings and some pictures and a description of exactly what we need to do. I'm going to need a little bit of engineering help before I'm in a position to do that. And again, it's a project that we're waiting for July 1st to get started on.
Now, is that going to be an additional building on each one of those sites?
Yeah, we're looking at additional buildings at the 100K, the 300K, and at the dune wells. The spit wells is a bit of a different thing. We've got electrical transformers and things down there that are in buildings that are dilapidated. And I can tell we've got a lot of a rodent activity in the area. I mean, rodents look for a warm place to be, and that transformer and things are, and we have to be careful of that because they can do severe damage.
Well, yeah.
And so I believe that the building down at the spit wells, our line of thinking right now is that we're going to build a generator shack for the generator, but we're going to, that building will be a little larger because we really got to protect those electrical systems down there from both the elements and from rodent activity and everything else. And the building the shelters that those are currently in are in poor shape and getting poorer. And the line of thought there is that we'll go ahead and put those inside the same shack as the generator, but it will require a larger footprint for the building. So we're looking at things like that, but we are looking for additional structures just for security and shelter of this very expensive generator equipment that we want to store permanently at these locations.
Well, I'd like to see it, if that's the case, have cement, or cinder block or whatever.
Well, there will be a pad port, no question about it.
All righty. Hey, thank you.
Tom, Sean had his hand up.
Thanks. Yeah. Hey, John and Rochelle, how much did we use the wells in May?
Rochelle, do you know? I don't have a good feel for that, to be honest.
I would say hardly at all, because we did a lot of flushing. Maybe a quarter, 25%.
25% of the time we used the wells?
At the most.
At the most.
Like 15.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Is that something we could do a graft on the wells, the usage of the wells?
Oh, yeah, it is. And I do think we keep track of the runtime. I just don't have the numbers in front of me right now.
Well, I'd like to see if it's all possible, I mean, to do a graft, to see maybe a monthly graft on it.
Yeah, we can look into that.
Okay.
Okay, so that, I think, concludes the manager's report. Moving on to item 6, unfinished business. 6A is the wastewater master plan.
Can I interrupt for a second? I'm afraid I have to leave. I wasn't intending to be so far down on the agenda. I thought that I'd be up a little higher, and I have an appointment at 6, which I'm going to be late for now. So anyway, that you guys could bump me up, please.
How does everybody feel about that? I'm okay with putting item 7A ahead of item 6. Is the board in agreement to that?
That's fine with me.
Okay, that's three of us. Sean stepped away, but we'll take that to be everybody. So we'll move on for now to item 7A, the Kingfisher Apartments developer request, Kevin Schluka. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you. I apologize for skipping in line there, but I'm afraid I've been pretty booked these days. We are planning on breaking ground on Monday to build our apartments, 23 units, as you may or may not know. Unfortunately, an additional bit of information is that $300,000 of our SDC fees will be paid by the Oregon Housing and Community Services, basically the state of Oregon. Unfortunately, our bank, in its wisdom, wants a subordination agreement from the state of Oregon. And you can imagine that the Department of Justice isn't fast on signing something called a subordination agreement. So what I expected to have, a check for $300,000 for you guys by the end of the month, is a little unclear if that timing is going to work or not. Now, I had intended to come here and ask if you guys could hold the estimate and the current fee structure for the Kingfisher with a deposit. And I am willing to do that. However, in thinking about it, knowing that the board is concerned with precedent, not just if there has been precedent, but setting future precedent, it seems to me that standard practice is to provide an estimate and then provide basically a sunset on that estimate or an expiration on that estimate. So, you know, every other subcontractor, contractor we're working with provides an estimate and then applies 30, 60, 90 days to that estimate. It would be wonderful if the estimate that I currently have, which is $494,148, could have a 60 or 90 day expiration applied to it. I think that's probably the most straightforward and repeatable or not repeatable for the organization. But if that is not satisfactory, I am willing to provide a payment on the balance minus the $300,000 in order to secure the prices before they go up July 1st.
So could you repeat that last part one more time? If I heard you correctly, what I heard you say was the $300,000 is not in your hands to give to the authority at this moment. So you would be proposing to pay anything above that at this point and pay the $300,000 when it became available. So you're still proposing paying the SDCs in two stages. Am I understanding that correctly?
So that's the second option. And that's an option I'm totally willing to do. But I thought that it is quite standard, like I said, to provide an estimate with expiration date on that estimate, and that may be more straightforward for the Water and Sanitary Authority.
So, taking that into consideration, I thought we might ask John to, just stepping back from this particular project, to talk a little bit about the ordinance that establishes our authority to charge system development charges, and how that SDC bill was drawn up in the first place, so that the board understands what the rules are and how this what we're calling an estimate was prepared. So, John, could you do that for us a little bit so we're on the same page?
Yeah, you want me to get into the details of the particulars of the SDC charges, or you wanting me to just talk what I know about ordinances and give my thoughts about that?
I think maybe more the ordinances, because it sounds like Kevin has a clear picture of what the proposal, what our charges would be as of today. So, and if any of the board members are interested in that, they can follow up with you in the office and see an exact estimate and how that was built. So,
yeah,
I'm talking about that. But could you talk a little bit about ordinances and?
Yeah, I can. You know, what our ordinance says about this is pretty clear. I'll give you a little bit of detail. You know, Kevin's apartment complex is going to have 23 units. There's a 3/4 inch water service that SDC that had been paid on the property. We do not have any evidence of a sewer estimate or a sewer SDC being paid, but Kevin's looking at an 1.5-inch water meter. So what we, which is currently at, on the SDC costs up until the 1st of July of this year, are $58,280 for an 1.5-inch SDC. We have extended Kevin modern day price credit for the 3/4-inch SDC that was paid, which is $17,483. He's got 23 units. As you all know, we've got a SDC rate structure that has an SDC charge per unit. We're only billing him for 22 units because we've already, you know, we've already asked billing for the 1.5-inch SDC. Looking at about $315,000 in cost for the water related SDCs and about $179,000 for the sewer-related SDCs, for a grand total of $494,148, which I think is exactly what Kevin said. You know, I guess just a couple of thoughts about this. You know, I'm going to wear a couple of hats here. I mean, you know, on one hand, it's not hard to be empathetic to Kevin's situation. He's been trying to get this program going, or this project going for a long time. He's got a lot of himself invested. He's had to get past a lot of obstacles just to get to this point. You know, there's also, I think we all understand how expensive SDCs can be for development of the type that Kevin is working on. And I can tell you from painful personal experience how hard it is to find a place to live in Pacific City. And you can apply those comments to the entire county for that matter. You know, Kevin offers one thing which I think a lot of other people in this situation could not offer, which is a grant funding, which apparently has been approved and is guaranteed. It's just a matter of timing on the payment. So I wanted to throw that out for everybody to consider. However, I also want everybody to consider the fact that we do have an ordinance and a resolution related to this. It currently contains no exceptions for a situation like this, and we have, as far as we can tell, no historical precedent for a situation like this. Talking as authority manager now, you know, I think we have to be really cautious to make any exceptions, because if we grant an exception for this, we're not in a good position to deny the next person who wants the same consideration. There is, you know, my concern, and I'm torn by this, and I'll tell you guys, but my concern is that if we don't follow our own rules and regs, we can't really expect anybody else to. And so there is some consideration for this. We, at all times, we got to maintain our integrity, our consistency, our credibility. in terms of how we handle situations like this and how we enforce our own rules. So I would just throw that out to the group. You know, this is a board decision. This is not my decision. It's not an easy decision. But I just wanted to kind of relay my thoughts about an issue that I'm torn about, that, you know, and in terms of the estimate, I mean, I understand the 30, 60, 90 day. Well, I mean, I think in my mind we can probably consider our estimate to have a 1 year expiration date, which began on July 1st, 2021. So, you know, there's a lot of things to consider here. And I just wanted to give everybody the whole range of my thoughts and feelings about this. But as I say, it's a board decision. It's not a decision I can make. But hopefully my comments have been valuable to the conversation.
Can I just add in, to Tom, I'll be right with you. I'd like to take John's comments maybe one step further, and that is to remind everyone that we are not an independent business process. We are a government establishment. So our ordinances have been researched and financially planned out and passed and are on file with the state of Oregon. The SDC ordinance is one of those. And then, as you all well know, we've just been through the budget process. There is a budget resolution that covers the actual costs, the dollar amounts for each thing on the list. And that was approved at the budget committee meeting a few weeks ago. I think the thing that we need to have absolutely in the front of our minds is that a government agency does not have the authority to make exceptions to its ordinances unless the ordinance specifically allows that. And this ordinance does not, it can only be modified by resolution.
I'm not suggesting, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm not suggesting that.
Let me just finish my thought, because enacting a resolution of any sort, and in this case it's related to SDCs, but enacting a resolution would require thorough thought and advice by attorneys, thorough discussion by the board, professional advising of I'm not even sure how many people, but to make any changes to what is published in the ordinance and the current resolution would subject the authority to legal jeopardy, I believe, at the state level. So, and that is why we can't entertain a 60 to 90 day guarantee. Our fees are set by the budget year, so it depends on timing. So go ahead, Kevin.
I apologize for interrupting. I do need to go. You know, I like I said, I came originally with the intention of providing a deposit, but realizing that that is, to a degree, an exception, where standard practice in the construction industry is to provide an estimate and to provide a window where that estimate is good. And never have I received an estimate where they said the estimate is good for a year starting January 1st. That just doesn't happen.
Well, so, this is not a private contractor. This is a government agency. So,
okay, I understand. Well, I appreciate your time. That's fine. I appreciate your time, and you all have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry you have to leave, and we'll continue the discussion. So, Tom, I'm sorry. You had your hand up.
John, the combination SDCs for water and sewer was over $400,000. Was that correct?
$794,000 and change.
Okay, so July 1st is what he was trying to avoid, was to pay more after the new ones. How much, what percentage of increase are, will our new SDCs be after July 1st?
It would add 15,000 and change to the total.
Okay, that's pretty minor then. So he's between a rock and a hard place. And Ann, I appreciate your comments 100%. It'd be nice to be able to help this guy, but like you mentioned in your comments, John, this was a long, hard process for him, and it's been the extra housing's desperately needed. But we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Actually, we are where we have to be. So too bad we can't help.
Sean?
Yeah, I guess I would have two questions, I think, maybe three, just to kind of round out this discussion. The first question is there in our ordinance, does it state when an SDC fee has to be paid?
Well, actually, it does, and what I found interesting, and this was just my read of it today, is we require it to be paid within a certain period of time by our ordinance, which is quite old, by our ordinance within a certain time frame after water and sewer availability and other things are in place. I think our general philosophy has been that as long as they are paid, we don't connect water and sewer until they are paid, and that's our leverage.
So in other words, I mean, they don't need the water. I mean, they're not going to probably have water and sewer hookup by July 1st. So, you know, there's nothing that requires them to pay at any particular time other than when they want to have water and sewer.
That's my understanding, and that's been pretty much how we've conducted our business practices related to this. That's been pretty much how we've conducted things. Yes.
And when we have required, or when we require SDCs to be paid, I assume we require them to be paid in full. Is there, you know, there's no, you know, I can pay this amount here and this amount there kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to find it, but the ordinance specifically says paid in full. So I'm trying to put my finger on that right now.
Can I add one thing?
Yes, please.
Typically, we do not accept applications at all without payment.
Okay.
We'll offer.
And if he did apply for them, we would not accept it because he did not have full payment. That is our common practice.
Okay. Sean, did you have a follow up?
What Kevin has, I'm assuming then, because I'm trying to go back and remember when we did this originally, was we essentially gave him a letter that stated that water and sewer was available. Is that correct?
Correct.
And when we sent him that letter, you know, saying, because I think that was a requirement of development or something, did we quote a SDC fee in that letter?
Well, I don't know for sure. And you know, it's hard for me to know what was said or even emailed by past authority managers. I know he's been working on this project for 3 to 4 years. I talked to Tony, and Tony said that he has discussed costs with him rather early in the process several times. The problem is we can't, if we give a quote, it's only good until July 1st of the following year. So we don't really call it a quote. People want to know what the charges are. We look at our current rate sheet, and we do the math, and we give them the cost. It's hard for me to consider that being a quote. It's just what things cost at in a current snapshot of time, and it has to be understood that anything in any cost estimate or quote or just price that we do give people has an expiration date, and it's when our new fiscal year starts, because our rates do go up every year. I guess it's your use of the term quote that I'm a little uncomfortable with, because I don't think that really describes what we do and what our fee structure represents, but it's possible that he was given a cost 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and now. But unfortunately, those costs don't stay the same. They escalate on an annual basis.
My recollection is this was longer than a year ago, so. You know, and my recollection of the experience was that, he came. I think it was an in-person board meeting at the time,
yeah.
If I remember right. And my recollection of the meeting was that he was essentially asking for credit for that one-quarter-inch water line, which seemed a reasonable request, and that we did a motion to do an availability letter. And that I used the word quote on purpose because I can't imagine that we would have something in writing that would reference a particular amount of money. It's just whatever the SDCs are for the particular year, right? And that's
yeah. So
if we did this as a board 3 years ago, it would have been one SDC fee. Then that would have gone up last year, which would have been another SDC fee. So we're probably two or three price increases from where we started on this thing.
Yeah, I can tell you that the availability letter went out, I think 2 years ago last February.
I've got it in front of me. It was dated February 5th, 2020. And it is a typical availability letter. There is no discussion because it would be premature of what the SDCs would be or anything else. The purpose of the availability letter is simply to confirm in the process of applying to community development for, I believe, building permits or that sort of thing, that water and sewer is available, period. That's all there is in that letter. So.
Okay, thanks. I don't see any flexibility, unfortunately.
Cameron, did you have your hand up?
I think he's muted.
Uh-oh, I think you're muted.
We've got people that have prepaid our systems already that haven't hooked up to our... They've already prepaid everything, right? So if he wanted it back then, he should have prepaid everything, and he would have gotten things then. I think we should stand by our ordinance. He's been going through this process for 4 years, say 4 years, and we've got guidelines, and I think we've got to follow that. I don't think we could step, aside and do... a special treatment. I really don't. I think
if we got it then. In the case of people who had prepaid it, there was a time when you could do that, but
right.
The board voted to suspend that process. I can't remember exactly when, but it could be there are one or two people out there that still have a lot with prepaid, and I don't know if we honor those now or if we discontinued them. I'm not sure about that. That's all separate issue, but you're absolutely right that for a while there were prepaid. That is no longer possible, and I don't believe it was possible when he entered into this project.
Right. So I think we should, this is what it is. If he wants to get it in before July 1.
Well, or then the new fees will apply that are approved in our budget, so the new SDCs take effect July 1st.
So if he pays a partial, does that still, does that retain back to June, or will that start with July?
He's not, according to our ordinance, we don't accept partial payments.
So,
and
that's it.
And you know,
pay one or the other of them. In this, could you do that? If he wanted to currently, right now, tomorrow, pay the sewer SDC, he could go ahead and do that, or pay the water one.
He could, and we have advised him.
Okay.
We have advised him that if that was an option, that the water SDC would be the one to try to pay. Although it's the highest, it's also the one that'll go up the most. So we did coach him a little bit about that. And whether he has the ability to pay either to avoid a cost increase on either one or the other. I do believe that is an option for him on the table. I don't see anything to prevent that. But, you know, I will say that I think all four board members made the only decision that they could make in this situation.
And my understanding is from reading the SDAO board handbook in terms of forms of action that boards take is that that motions are used to adopt or approve a matter that will create policy or have major effect beyond the meeting itself. So it sounds to me, as John just said, that there is consensus among the four of us not to proceed or proceed with exploration of any kind of time payment or anything like that, that we're pretty much agreed on that. So there is no action for us to take. We're just, through our discussion and consensus, confirming what our rules are and saying that we can make no exceptions to them. So does that seem appropriate to everybody else?
Just to me.
Okay, so we have a recorded, correct? We're being recorded, right?
We still are, yes.
Okay, good. We have a record of our discussion, should there be any question about that, but my understanding is we only need a motion if we are going to take action, and the only action we would take would be to approve an exception to our ordinance, which we are not inclined to do. So it seems to me that we're basically taking no action on this, and the rules stay what the rules are for everybody. So does that make sense? Does that sound good to everybody?
Hey, Ann.
Yeah.
The only thing I would recommend is maybe get a phone call to him or by John and say let him know that this is it. He's more than welcome to make a payment on one if that's the case, but this is where, you know, there's that option. You did give him an option. I mean,
yeah.
There's options available. So.
Yeah, good point, Cameron, and I'm sure John will follow up with him. And because he had to leave, that's too bad that he couldn't stay until we finished this discussion. But we understand that schedules are what they are. So knowing that John will follow up, is that okay, John?
Yeah, that's okay. I think he's got the sense of it that he did leave before we heard from each and every board member, and I think it might be important for him to know that this was a unanimous decision and we're all in full agreement about it.
Maybe in the future when we have somebody in there that wants to be a part of the agenda, to let them know they're down at the tail end of it because we've got other business to take care of. Just to let them know possibly that It might be a while until we get to them.
Yeah, well, and I also mentioned that we had a budget hearing meeting at the beginning that was hard to predict how long it would go. Sometimes it takes a while to get to the new business items, and of course that's where something like this would reside.
Right. Yeah. So, well, just for the future of anybody else wanting to get on the agenda, let them know that.
Okay.
So we'll resume our agenda then and return to item number 6A, wastewater. Oh, wait, no. Are we? Yeah, 6A, wastewater master plan. I think that's where we were, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you notice that the water master plan is no longer on the agenda, thankfully. That master plan is done. It's been approved by the state, as is.
Rochelle.
Is now exiting.
Good job.
Yeah, and in terms of the wastewater master plan, I'll be honest with you, they're part of the delay now is in my court. They're waiting for some pumpers and some individual pump information from me in order to get to the point where they can finish calibrating the wastewater model. I've got to set aside some time to dig up this information. It's not as simple as you guys might think, just because over the years we have replaced multiple pumps and multiple lift stations. We now have scenarios where in many cases we have two completely different pumps in the same lift station. And they need pump crews for each and every one. They need to know the impeller diameters. They need to know the total dynamic head. They need to know the horsepower. They need to know all this stuff. And sometimes the only way I can get it at this point is to send some people out there to pull the pump and to write down everything they see on the nameplate. And even then, sometimes I'm having trouble coming up with the information. So I do believe the wastewater, as I've said for a while, I do believe the wastewater, sorry, that's my wife's cell phone going off, she's on it. I am expecting to see the draft of this soon. I've been saying it a while, but right now, and for probably the last 2 to 3 weeks, I'm part of the holdup, and I've got to find time to get that information to them. Once we do, they can finish their calibration of the model, and then they can get us a draft of the plan, finally. And if it's all right, Ann, can I, unless there's any questions about the wastewater master plan, I can, that's a good segue right into the water management and conservation plan.
Go ahead.
Okay, so as everyone knows, we completed a draft of our water management and conservation plan. Like the water master plan, we've got a regulatory agency we have to send that to get final approval. Unlike the water master plan, we got a lot of feedback from the Water Resources Department. So we are responding to that feedback. You know, most of it's small stuff, but there are some things that they want us to address or some revisions they'd like us to make to the water management and conservation plan. Our engineering firm is currently working on revising the plan based on the comments we received from the Oregon Water Resources Department. They're anticipating to have the revisions done by the end of the month, at which time we'll send it back to the Water Resources Department for additional comment or approval. I think the second go around they will approve it. It looks like the Water Resources Department a little bit more particular about some of the details than the Oregon Health Authority was about the Water Master Plan, but there's nothing big here. But it is gone back to the two parametrics for a revision based on those comments. Hope to have it resubmitted to the Water Resources Department by the end of the month, with final approval to come within 2 or 3 weeks after that.
Okay, thanks for the update. Anything else on that, John?
I don't have anything more to add about that.
Okay. Item 6D, in-person meetings.
Actually, I think we got an item C left there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Item C, SDAO Best Practices Insurance Program. Sorry, I skipped ahead.
Yeah, this was
we talked about each month.
Yeah, this is just kind of a carryover. I will say that everybody has completed their the short training that we needed. That got us from 6% discount to 8% discount. I want to thank everybody for their help. I just want to point out that in order to get the last 2%, sounds like we've got a commitment from Cameron to attend the SDA Academy. However, we need two people to do it. I'm not going to twist any arms or put any pressure on anybody. But I just wanted to remind everybody, if it's something that you guys can fit into your busy schedule, that would be good for the authority. But I understand how busy everyone is. As I say, Cameron has volunteered for one position. But we only get credit if we have two people. So as I say, I'm not going to twist any arms or put anybody on the spot. But I just it's worthy of mentioning again. And that's about the only thing I wanted to say about that topic.
I would just add, John, that if anyone doesn't remember the details of that they could contact you or Rochelle, probably has that front of mind in terms of hours of online and that kind of thing. And it's, as I recall, it was over quite a very long time period. There's a huge window to accomplish it, and a lot of it's done independently. So if you're considering filling that slot and have forgotten those details, please reach out to Rochelle and she can follow up.
It would be helpful if we knew exactly how much of a time commitment we're talking about.
I think in her original email there was information about that, but if you can't locate that email, just give her a call maybe, Tom, and she can send it to you again, because as I recall, it was pretty specific. And the time frame to complete it was, and I don't have it easily accessible right now, but I'd send it to you, but I'm sure Rochelle would be able to send that to you.
And I think Rochelle had to step away.
Yeah.
Otherwise, she probably would have chimed in and provided some detail right now.
Yeah, I think it would... I believe we could have gone down for some classes and stuff and got it all done, like in an 8-hour day for that, for the SDAO stuff on that. It would have been a class that would have done it. So.
Is that an alternative to online segments? Is that what you're thinking?
I was going to do it. I was just going to go to a class and do it.
Okay. So, again, you know, there may be different ways to accomplish it with the same goal. That's what Cameron seems to be thinking. So, Tom, if you could, or John, maybe you could let Rochelle know that Tom would like a follow-up on the real details of that.
Sure.
That'd be great if they could email or talk on the phone or whatever it takes.
Sure.
So, cool. Okay, so now are we ready for item 6D, in-person meetings? So this is an item that John and I thought it had been said that we were going to table in effect, waiting for Carolyn to be back at the table with us and that kind of thing. But one of our members had a different recollection and felt strongly that it be on the agenda tonight, so that's why we had the last minute addition. And you have an email from John with more information about that, but in-person board meetings. Tom.
When we tabled this last month, we really didn't have any idea how long we would have to wait for Carolyn. I'm distressed, you know, to understand that, you know, this might last a few more months with her, and that means, you know, her personal situation is not good, and that bothers me, but we have to move forward. We have too many things on our plate coming up. We have to bring to the public our water master plan, our wastewater master plan, our water management and conservation plan when that shows up. You know, if there's the only real practical venue we have to have in-person meetings because of COVID and reasonable concerns by other board members about our own personal health as well as the health of the public. And that venue is KCC. Those of us who have lived here a long time know that KCC books fast and furious in the season. And what I'm concerned about is we need to bring these things to the public with public input and advice from the public. And if we don't jump on KCC right now, we may not be able to have an opportunity to get that venue for, you know, as much as maybe 6 months, clear into the fall. And that's just not acceptable. Considering our passion for Carolyn's situation, I'm reluctant to force this issue, but unfortunately, I feel that we have a lot of issues that need public input. And as you know, our video conferences has had literally no input from the public for 2 years. That seriously distresses me. So it's time to do this. I hate to force this issue, but it needs to be done, and have our next meeting on July 12th at KCC. We've had a preliminary quote, I can't recall who looked at it, I believe it was Rochelle, of like $135 an hour, which would go to our normal 2 hour meeting would be $270 a month for the Faye Jensen room, which is plenty big enough for, you know, the possible 30 people that we might have. So I'd like to hear our other director's comments, but I think COVID really put a hurt on us, and I think it's been detrimental to this organization because we haven't had public input like we have. I would like to compliment the Sun newspaper and Tim Hirsch specifically for his diligence in reporting our activities for the last couple of years, but it still doesn't cover what those impromptu questions that come up in a live situation. So I'll yield the floor here to hear everybody else's comments.
So, other comments, Cameron?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this for quite a while. COVID's here to stay. I mean, we've all gotten used to it, and the big scare is out. I think we've got a lot of information that needs to get out there, and especially now with some projects that are going to be coming up and going to be some costly ticket items, you know, and People are wondering when we're going to get started doing some projects on the roads. You know, they keep hearing, you know, things breaking, or even when they're working on the roads, it's like, well, what broke down, or what projects you got going on? I don't think the public has gotten a chance to really meet John, get to know him. I think in the past we've always had a meeting where they met. I'd like to see it back in public, and also that we look towards revising our building to accommodate a little bit bigger, or for COVID expansion for amounts of people. So yeah, I'm all for it. Let's get it going. I'm sympathetic to Carolyn, and her, you know, I understand. Everybody understands, you know, health issues. They come and go, and family is really most important. But we still, as a public entity, need to keep moving and getting busy. And we've gotten backed up on project, and I think we're getting backed up. And I don't like to come from behind. I like to stay on top of things abreast. So let's book the KCC place, and let's get moving on and getting the information out there to people.
Okay, Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm in general agreement. I think it's just it's time to get back to in-person meetings. I do still think that we should look into a couple of things. I think we need to have that conversation with legal counsel just to make sure that we know whether or not there's a difference in the kinds of things that we have control over, having it off-site versus on-site. And I think we still need to make sure to have an option for either a video conferencing system or some way for a board member to call in as opposed to attend in person. You know, odds are if this thing's going to be with us for a while, one of us is going to catch COVID during a board, you know, prior to a board meeting at some point and have to phone in. So, but yeah, I think it's time to get back into person. It's, we just need to do it. Oh, you know, one thing I wrote down, John, you were going to check in with, I think, Doug at the chamber in regards to them going back to in-person meetings. Did you get a chance to do that?
I did not, but one thing we did do, because our last inquiry had been a little stale, had gotten a little old, is we reached out to the community center to be sure that their prior offer was still valid, and they confirmed it was.
I would say that we go ahead and book it up for a year, because I, you know, we don't want to have some scheduling conflict given how peculiar our meetings are at a particular day and time during the month. So I'd say we just go ahead and book it out for the next 12 months.
So I have some thoughts too, and I made some notes here I'm going to try to refer to without being distracting. As I think Tom mentioned, we really haven't had any kind of expression of public interest, and I don't think that's entirely because of COVID, and I can say from my years of experience on this board, there have only been a couple of times in all the years I've been on the board where we almost literally had one member of the public in the room with us meeting. So I think that is kind of the pattern. I think it's surprising. I think we all think that people ought to be more interested and come to the meetings and at least listen in. But I don't think the lack of expressed public interest during the COVID period is just because it's online. I think we've made every effort to inform people that those things are available. And we're not getting questions submitted that are being brought by the staff to the meetings either. So let me finish. Cameron, let me finish, please. Just, can you hold your thought?
Sure.
Let me find my place again. The other thing is, not only have there not been any expression of interest to tune into the video, there have been no questions asked, and there have been absolutely no requests for the agenda even. And it is posted on our website and on the public notice of the meeting that the detailed agenda is available, and all you have to do is call this number. And there have been no requests for that. So I factored that into my thinking relative to monthly business meetings. Now, the other issue that's come up here in this discussion, I'm in complete agreement with, and that is the concept of when we talk about the water master plan or the wastewater master plan, or we're going to eventually come to the point of needing to make decisions about Horn Creek. And I mean, those are major issues, and I think it's going to be essential to have public meetings in that instance. I'm going to cross my fingers and toes that COVID's not going to rear back up and prevent that. I don't think it will either, but we always have to keep that in our minds. So I think I see a big difference between the types of meetings. And I do think it's extremely important to at least offer the public an opportunity to understand what a master plan is, that it's a 20-year plan, that it's very complicated, it can be interrupted by emergencies that come up, and just the whole concept of how the authority works, I think, is embedded in those master plans. So, and when we did those meetings before, we had engineering staff from Parametrics at the time. We had them there at the meeting too, so they could answer questions from their perspective. So those were very good meetings and very worthwhile. I will say not well attended, but I think everybody felt good about the opportunity. So I draw a distinction between the two, and in terms of the scarcity of rooms and booking the KCC out every one Tuesday a month for the next year, I'm frankly a little concerned about spending that money every month, because, not because we don't have it, we do, but I'm not convinced that for the monthly business meeting that we're going to see attendance. And I think, I'm afraid that if we do that, make a 12-month commitment to whatever dollar amount it was, that we will have signed a contract booking that, and can we get out of it? I'm really reluctant personally to commit to the monthly business meeting being in person. And the other ones, the bigger meetings, of course, we don't know what the timeline is. So we have no way of booking a room when we don't know when the wastewater master plan is going to be finished. So we would, I think we'll have a better idea of some of those details along the way in plenty of time to schedule a meeting. And whether it's a weekday evening meeting or on the weekend, because that's when second homeowners are here and that's a population we want to include. There are all kinds of issues to the timing of a community-based meeting like that. So for now, that's my two cents.
And my thought is, I, with the COVID stuff, I wouldn't go to a concert because of, there's a lot of people in a lot of space. But everybody knows in the community how small that conference room is. And I particularly, for one, I think it's too small for us to have our meetings. I mean, I don't think it's big enough for what we can get, maybe 5-6. And I think the people know that, so why bother? I think if the opportunity is, they're at the community center, Faye Jensen or the other, wherever else, it's a little bit bigger, and I can get myself away from somebody, and I would be more apt to do it, to go.
That's true, but I would suggest that we continue with the video conference calls for now for the monthly business meeting. and that we have a commitment to schedule that larger facility for those big topics like the water master plan or wastewater master plan and those things.
But even if the case, if you're concerned about that, let's start just meeting down at the back down at the office if there's just only us. I mean, let's see how it goes for us to go back into the conference room if it's only us. I mean,
that's an idea to consider. But Sean, what do you think?
And I'm just curious, what would be your threshold or requirement for getting back to in-person meetings?
Well, I have not looked at the statistics in the last week or so, but when I was looking at them before, and I'll grant you right up front that they change every 24 hours. So, but I was looking at another new variant coming through percentages. I was listening to the county meeting on in the morning, the community meetings that they have on Tuesdays, and the health authority was saying that, yes, we're seeing a much increased positivity rate in tests, but the other complication is because there are so many home tests out there now that people are taking home tests, testing positive and not reporting. So we're seeing an increase of testing through the health authority, but we don't know what's happening with the rest of the people, the home test people. We have no idea what the positivity rate there is. So that gives me concern. So,
yeah, I think that's valid. I'm trying to get a sense, and I'm not trying to be flippant, but, you know, prior to COVID hitting, the default position for the PCGWSA is that we had in-person meetings.
Right.
And I think that needs to continue to be the case. And obviously we're in the middle of a COVID situation, so we chose to change that. But at some point we're going to have to get back to in-person meetings. And so, you know, I guess I'm trying to get a sense from you, because it seems like there's three of us anyway that are ready. If it were up to me, I'd do video conference meetings in perpetuity. I don't have any interest in going back to the public. But I think it's a responsibility and part of our transparency that we have to. And so I guess I'm just trying to, you know, get a sense from you of, you know, where is that comfort level? Is it when the county is definitely in a low-risk position? Is it when there's no more subvariants circulating out there? I mean, at some point we're going to have to get back to in-person meetings, and I'm just curious as to if you have any thoughts on what that tripwire is for you.
Well, and it's hard, Sean, because I don't know that there is a specific tripwire, because the ground keeps changing, but also there are so many variables, like the test positivity rate. We really don't know the answer to that. We don't know if people are vaccinated or not. Do we want to require vaccination for attendance at a public meeting? That's another question to address. I'm fine with video conference meetings too, but I completely agree that we're a public agency and we need to have public meetings. I think we've done everything we can to attract the public and make ourselves available to the public. And the thing that gets to me all the time when I think about this is there's absolutely no interest being expressed from the public about what's going on. And we have continued to announce our meetings publicly and on the website, and we just don't get any inquiries. So I have a hard time justifying an expense. Although, in the grand scale of things, it's not a huge amount of money, but I have a hard time justifying an expense when we have had no driving demand to do that, I guess is where I am with it. And does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tom?
I recognize your concerns. I recognize Sean's concerns, but as a public organization. We're a governmental agency. I think transparency and access to the public is critical. And it's been almost two and a half years. So I think we have to start somewhere, and I think that starting period is next month. And in saying that, at this time, I'd like to make a motion that we...
Can I respond to that before your motion, Tom? You're talking about transparency is very important. Yes, it is. I completely agree with that. I do not think that what we are doing now is not transparent. I think it's accessible. I think it's available.
I disagree.
I think that there's not a demand for it, and there are still reasons for concern.
Well, most of the folks in our community, well, not most. Let me come up with a better generalization. A lot of the folks in our community are folks that have retired and aren't comfortable with computer process, and they nitpick at it. And you know a lot of folks like that. I know a lot of folks like that. And in-person meetings, I think, are the only way to go. And we need, and medical concerns are serious and proper, and we've had this discussion for literally a year while COVID goes up and down. And if the situation trade changes drastically, okay, so we've got a little money invested in this thing, that's okay, so we take a little hit there, not a whole lot, but we got to start somewhere, and I think that starting point is next month.
Could we separate out the concepts of the business meeting from the major meetings?
Our public business meetings, and that's where I'm coming from. And I think it's time to start doing it. If something dramatic happens, well, something dramatic happens, we change. But we have to have, since we don't have a building of our own, we have to get something, and we have to do it now because we won't get it for the rest of the summer. So I, at this time, I make a motion that we have John and our staff, get together with KCC and make sure we have the Faye Jensen room for the second Tuesday of every month for at least the next year. And we'll probably would be smart while we do this to provide baths for the public if they want to attend. And I move that the staff do this, and that we vote on it after discussion.
I second that motion.
Okay, so let me see if I can follow through and repeat the motion. The motion is that beginning in July, that we would move to in-person business meetings, monthly business meetings, and rent the Faye Jensen Hall at the Kiwanda Community Center and make a commitment to that schedule and expense for a period of 12 months.
Correct.
And that's been moved and seconded. So I will just call for the vote. All in favor?
Wait, can we have a quick discussion?
I'm sorry, yes, discussion. I forgot that.
Thank you.
Yes.
I would just say, and I'm in agreement, although just to hedge my bets a little bit, I wonder if Tom and Cameron might entertain a slight amendment to that where we do it for the August meeting instead of the July meeting. And I say that simply because, and I've been saying this for the last few months now, I would really like to get an idea from legal counsel what our responsibilities are and whether or not we have the ability to the same conduct our meetings in the same way at an off-site facility as we do on an on-site facility.
Is that an acceptable amendment to your motion, Tom?
That's a reasonable amendment, but I think we need to at least nail those dates down for the next year. But, and I appreciate Sean's concern for our legal position, and that is a reasonable amendment. That's all right with me. Is that all right with you, Cameron?
Well, I don't see why it would take 2 months to get advice from legal. I'd only think that that'd probably take 2 weeks to do that. I would like to see, if that's the case, let's do July's meeting at the office and then find out from legal for August and the rest. Because then we can get a feel for if we're going to have, you know, the people show up, possibly, you know.
So we've got a motion on the table for July with an amendment accepted by he who moved it, that we start in August. And I do think there's quite a bit to look into beyond just scheduling the room. We're talking about a video conference capability and legal things. And so I think there are a few things to work out there. And it might, given the list of things that John has been through that are on his desk, which is pretty high.
But I'm concerned about it. Make sure we get those dates pinned down, because we won't be able to do anything for the next 6 months if we don't. We have to get those dates pinned down.
And we don't know whether pinning the dates down requires payment ahead or by the month if we use it. So there will be that detail to look
John
into.
John should take care of that.
Right. They will. So we have a motion to return to in-person meetings and an amendment or in July, but the amendment is to start that in August at the Kiwanda Community Center. That's been moved and seconded. The amendment's been accepted. So all
the
in favor?
The amendment hasn't been seconded.
I'll second the amendment. Can I second my own amendment?
Well, you accepted, Tom, you accepted the amendment, and you were the proposer of the vote in the first place, and you accepted it. So it is an official part now of the motion, is that would begin in August. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Me? Okay. So thank you. I think that was a good discussion, and I think we've got something a little more concrete now to work with, and we also have a July meeting in case any piece of this kind of goes haywire. So I think that's valuable too.
What's the consensus about next month's meeting then? Meeting at the authority?
I'd like to see
that. That's a separate issue. I'm not personally comfortable with that myself.
I don't think there's any way we can have a public meeting at the authority. I mean, there's no way to predict who might show up, so we have no idea how close we're going to be. I think that's just a disaster if we do that.
Okay, noted.
Okay, good. Good discussion. Thanks, everybody. Now we're going to return to new business, item 7. We completed 7A, so the last thing there is surplus vehicle, or 7B, surplus vehicle declaration of a 2005 Chevy Silverado 2500 heavy duty. John, do you want to walk us through what you need on that?
Yeah, so we've been communicating with the board about the need for a new vehicle. It took a while. We do have that new vehicle. It is now been outfitted with all the necessary lights and everything else that we have on our vehicles. It's a welcome addition to our fleet. However, in exchange, we've got an older vehicle that we would like to declare as surplus and to auction to the highest bidder. I think this is usually a silent auction process. Rochelle had the exact VIN number, and so I'm not sure how specific we got to get in the motion. I know what vehicle we're talking about, and there's no risk of somehow declaring or selling off the wrong vehicle to the highest bidder. You know, but I do know we have a, you know, we have a number of fleet vehicles, and we are very specific about which one we're talking about. My understanding is that in order for us to move forward with this, the board needs to make a declaration that the vehicle in question has been relegated to surplus. And in looking at how we've handled this in the past, my understanding is all we need is a motion to declare said vehicle as surplus and to sell it to the highest bidder. And I don't think we need any type of motion more specific than that, to my knowledge. And I'm asking the board to consider making such a motion so that we can move forward with the sale of this vehicle that we are now calling surplus.
Tom, you had a question?
A couple. I take it that we're going to have to publish that this vehicle is available to the public, and I think probably the only venue that's practical is the Sun. I'd also like to see that it's published on our website, and if we when we do that, it would be smart to get the best amount of value we can out of it to have a picture of it on our website. I understand it's a 2005 Silverado. What kind of mileage is on that, John?
Well, to be honest with you, Tom, I can't tell you at this point. I do expect the mileage to be quite high. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you at this point. I like the idea of you know, getting the word out about it. To be honest, I was kind of leaning on Rochelle to tell us how this went down the last time. But I do know that it is a silent bid process. I think the intent and what we've done in the past is that once this declaration has been made, I know what I understand is, among other things, we put it out on the street. It is a silent bid process. The goal would be to open the bids at the next business meeting. So I think usually it's approximately a month that the bid process is underway, that people have the opportunity to submit a silent bid for. I don't have a lot of historical knowledge about the process beyond that, to be honest with you, and I apologize for that.
Well, I've personally, once we started talking about this, I've mentioned in my travels that to several people who I knew need a pickup. And so their obvious questions is, what kind of shape's the body in, what color is it, how much mileage is on it, that sort of thing. What color is it? What kind of shape is it in?
Yeah, well, I think...
Would we all be part of the advertising process, or the bid process, information?
It would, and my understanding is we typically park it up on the street so that people can get a good look at it without having to come on authority property to do so.
Okay, I think the idea of having a photograph of the vehicle and with the particulars on the website would be a good thing to do. So if people ask me or you or anybody, well, if you can't see it at the shop, well, look on the website, because, you know, some people, I have summer homes, they might be interested in it also. The whole purpose
I think there is a public noticing process that is in place for these kinds of things. The Pacific City Sun is a great place to put things, but it is not considered a a newspaper of record, which is a technical term for governmental announcements. The Headlight Herald is the county's paper of record for those purposes. So I think there's a procedure there that John and Rochelle are going to have to nail down, but I don't think that that's necessarily a board level thing, as long as we maybe include in our motion that all required government procedures are followed to the letter.
I would like to see...
Cameron, yes, sorry.
I'd like to see, what is the minimum blue book value of that, and that we have a minimum bid of whatever Kelly Blue Book or whatever that is on there?
I don't think we can do that, Cameron.
I don't think so either. It's government surplus. It's not like me selling you my car.
Okay, so is everything taken out of there that has PC, JW, the plates, the sticker, on the door and everything?
It will be by the time that, yes, it will be. I can't tell you that as of right now it is. I can tell you that we have begun the process of getting the tools and everything else out of it. I can't tell you where we're at with this process, but that would be obviously a step in the procedure.
And that it would be sold, and it would be also sold as is, and if there are any maintenance records to go with, so be.
Yeah.
But board members can't bid on it.
Employees can't bid on it either, is my understanding.
Can I have my wife do it?
Sean, you had your hand up, and then we'll come back to him. You're muted. You're muted.
Thank you. Can I just go ahead and make the motion?
Oh.
So I move that we declare the 2005 Chevy Silverado 2500 HD as a surplus vehicle and to sell it at auction to the highest bidder.
I second.
So it's been moved and seconded that we declare the surplus, the 2005 Chevy Silverado 2500 HD as a surplus vehicle, and that following government procedures, we decommission the vehicle and offer it for sale to the highest bidder. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Perfect.
Okay. Bye-bye, 2005 car. So, trucks, yeah. Item 8, guest questions and comments. I don't believe we have any. Item 9, chair or director comments. Yes, Sean.
Yeah.
Just real quick, circle back to something we talked about earlier because it's something that came up with me over the last month. I would just like to suggest that once we have officially adopted the budget and it's good, which I think it should be now, that we go ahead and put it on the website.
Oh, I agree.
That was it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Cameron? Yeah.
I noticed on the page the phone number of 503-801-5315. Who is that?
What page are you talking about?
No, the phone number of attendance.
Oh, that bit.
On who attends on the meeting, and I'm not sure who that is. I wasn't able to.
Rochelle.
Well, I will say that it's either Rochelle. I will say it appeared to me that Kevin had joined the meeting by phone first. And then departed the meeting and joined it by video second. So I'm not 100% sure on whether it was Rochelle or Kevin, but unless somebody speaks up, I believe it's got to be one of the two.
There were only, at any point, there were only those two people, and then Kevin left, and then there was just Rochelle. So there was not a third person.
Okay. I've complained about this before, about phone numbers and coming up and not seeing who that person is on the board meeting, so it will reflect on the board meeting minutes.
Well, if I may interject, the problem is that since we don't send a meeting invite to every member of the public, the only way they can join the meeting when it's one of these video conference calls is by phone, unless they call and specifically ask for an invite. So that's a problem that will be hard to overcome in terms of these video conferences, but it's a problem that we won't have once we go to live meetings.
Okay.
Well, I do think all the while we could have provided the link for people to be here visually, like Kevin did.
Now, is that an additional cost on our website? Have we been paying extra for our meetings?
No, I will say, Ann, if there's a way to do what you suggested, I'm not aware of how to do it.
Well, Kevin did it tonight. How did he do it?
I sent him an invite.
Well, and that's my point exactly, is if a member of the public calls and wants to attend the meeting, they can request that invite. You can give that to them or the telephone number. It's their choice.
Exactly.
The meeting.
I'm sorry. You're exactly right.
So can we get it out in the next meeting or out in the paper that we will be going to? We need to get this out. That we are going to virtual or back into in-personal meetings in the paper somehow?
I think that is part of the advertisement, and we can change that when it applies.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty.
Okay. Any other chair or director comments? Hearing none, seeing some shaking of heads, we will adjourn the meeting at 7:13 p.m., and thank you all for a good meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, thanks, everybody.